Hello and welcome back to another episode of the FNF Football Podcast. Once again, to make up the three wise men this week, I'm joined by Big Papa Ewan.
Hello.
you need to say something.
Sorry, I forgot it wasn't just video.
You are so smooth. And I'm also joined by Big Papa Alex.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'd just like to disclose before we go any further that we're very sorry now for what we've done. It was just three wise men just trying to have some fun.
I'd also like to disclose that I love it when you call me Big Papa.
Throw your hands in the air if you're a true player. Yeah, this episode is purely just going to consist of song titles. But yeah, before we go any further, this week I am drinking Kronenbourg 1664. Blends rather well with my top. That wasn't why I chose it, but it's a nice add-on.
Nobody Alex, can see either.
Alex, what have you gone for?
First of all, you've been copying me on the Kronenbergs. I know that's what you try and do all the time. So I've gone for a Tisky.
Interesting.
In a Coors Light glass, because it's my favourite pint glass, and I quite like the beer, so yeah, that's what I've gone for. I'm drinking Moretti later, though.
Yeah, and next week I'll be drinking Tyski beer, followed by beer at Moretti. yeah, Ewan, what is your beverage of choice this week?
I've still got a few Sani M's left, so I'm still with the Sani M's.
Yeah, no complaints. And for those of you on the fancy YouTube, you will have noticed that I am at Sky Sports Studios. There is no Jim White behind me. There definitely is no Jim White behind me. But that's because today we are going to be doing a transfer talk. As it's January, Fabrizio Romano has come out of hiding, so we thought we'd talk a bit about transfers. Ewan, where are you coming to us from today?
So being a West Brom fan, I'm coming from a place that's special in all of our hearts, coming from Loftus Road. Obviously, January transfer window when the Odden Wingie saga happened, and I thought it's a nice throwback.
I thought you were going to say something derogatory about Charlie Austin leaving.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that's what it'd be about.
yeah, and Alex, where do you join us from?
Well, as you can see, these players behind me who are warming up are Norwich players. They're all in quite nice positions. Harrow Road.
Where are they?
I'm here because I'm trying to get an interview with Emiliano Buendia about his potential move, but we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, very smooth. I like what you've done there. Bit of a spoiler, but you know.
Well, I've not said what's gone on yet.
Yeah, so effectively, we're going to be looking at the done deals in the window so far, what ones there have been, sort of the rumours that have been flying around. Obviously, seems to be different rumours every day, but the main ones, the ones that we're interested in. And then who needs what, really, of the Premier League clubs? Who needs to strengthen? Where would they be looking to strengthen? And who would be a good fit for them? So, yeah, without further ado, I think the biggest sort of transfer, although we knew it was going to happen, is Diallo going to Man United. Very, very sort of raw prospect. I think he's only played 4 senior games.
I think it might be 5.
Either or. But yeah, Ewan, what do you think of this signing?
Yeah, so I think Diallo, what they've paid for him, I've seen it reported in for different amounts in different places, but I think it's around 20 million.
I should have said that add-ons have the potential to go up to 18.2 million, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, so he's obviously 18, a young prospect, is a pacey right winger. He's not played that many games. I think he's got 4 appearances in the Serie A and 1 appearance in the Champions League. From what I've heard, he's been training with the first team at United, so Solskjaer clearly has plans for him to be involved in some way this season. Only time will really tell whether he's going to be a good signing or not. I think we've got he's obviously got time on his side, younger than all of us by over a year, which is a little bit depressing.
So he doesn't get 81 views on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't think he has his own YouTube channel, actually. But yeah, I think only time will really tell whether Diallo is going to be a good fit or not. But I think he's got the makings of what could be a special player.
Yeah, Alex, anything to add?
Not really. I mean, I think the weird thing I'd say about it is that United have also got like Dan James, who's a young player in that position. But then I think sometimes when you see a player of this quality, he obviously does look a bit more like he's might be something more than what Dan Jones is going to be. If you can snap him up, you may as well. But I think it's a good signing, but I've not seen enough of him to say, I don't think anyone has to say that he's going to really.
I mean, unless you watch Italian League reserves, I don't think you will see much of him. But yeah, I think the thing that sort of stood out to me, I know United's recruitment hasn't been brilliant in recent years, but if Man U were sort of spending up to £37 million potentially on a player so young, they obviously see something in him. I heard this point raised. I thought it was an interesting one. Do we see this as United accepting they're not getting Jadon Sancho and they're going to plan for the future without him, potentially?
I don't think it's necessarily that. I know Alex brought up Dan James. I think Dan James is a bit of a punt. He is, I think, is also not as young as you sort of think. I think he's about 23, maybe.
Is he?
But I think Diallo, so for a good few years, he's not going to be that right winger. He's not going to be able to take that spot. So I think it's more whether they had Jadon Sancho or not, they'd potentially be looking at Diallo as someone for a backup option to eventually be pressing to take one of the wing options instead. So I think it's not necessarily that, accepting that they won't get Jadon Sancho. I think it's just United looking for young prospects so they could create into something else.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's certainly an interesting one. It'd be interesting to see how much game time he gets this season. I mean, if Van der Beek's anything to go by, we might not even see him. But I think the next one that sort of stood out to me, the next sort of move was Moussa Dembélé going from Lyon to Atletico Madrid on loan. Alex, any thoughts on this?
Not going to lie, not a lot, but I was going to say it's a bit of weird that with like Costa. Yeah. So Costa's gone now. So obviously they do have like a bit of a hole there, but they've still got Suarez, haven't they? So I think he's more so just going to be like, I think he's just going to be backup. Well, obviously he's not going to be starting over Suarez, but I think, it's a weird one. It wasn't loads of money, I think.
Well, it's just a loan. It's just a loan.
Didn't they pay a loan fee? Didn't they pay like a really small
They paid a small loan fee, but there's apparently an option to buy for around 30 million in the summer.
I think 30 million would be quite a lot for him. But then I think since Griezmann's gone, like they've struggled a bit up top, so maybe it's someone who can fill the gap better.
I think 30 million for a 24-year-old French, fairly prolific goal scorer isn't particularly much.
Yeah. Not been prolific this season, though.
No, so this season is only had one goal in 16 appearances, which obviously isn't too good. But he did come out and say to his sporting director that he had been lacking motivation and wanted to move away. And obviously, with everything going on, it might be the reason for his poor form. But now he's got to move away, and I think everything else he's done in his career and the last couple of seasons, if they're anything to go by, is definitely a top talent and will more than be a more than adequate backup striker for Atletico.
Yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me is typically with a loan, it's someone going out to get game time, if you know what I mean. But on this occasion, it feels like a step up going from Lyon to Atletico Madrid. The one thing I would say is that Atletico play two up front a lot. So Suarez obviously first choice, but I know Correa's played up front on occasion and Carrasco, but I could definitely see him fitting into that team. And yeah, I think we was all hearing great things about him when he was at Celtic, 26 goals in 55 games, and then Lyon bought him for £19.7 million. And as you say, he hasn't been great this season, but 32 goals in 76 games. I think there is real talent there. Obviously, Simeone likes a certain type of player, and I think it remains to be seen whether he fits in with his style, but that's fine, really, because it's a loan, if you know what I mean. But yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on, I think. The next one I thought...
I was just going to say, I think like for a striker like him, if you've got someone like Suarez that's there to be able to link up play for you, it's sort of a dream move in a way. You're going to have a lot of opportunities created for you.
It's a toss-up. But so for next one, William Saliba's gone on loan to Nice. He's obviously had a bit of a tough time of it at Arsenal. I think he had a family bereavement fairly recently. A bit of a tough time with injuries as well. How did you feel about this one, Ewan?
Yeah, so he was bought for Arsenal for about 25 million, was it? Or
it
was around that. And soon after coming, or I think maybe even before coming, he lost both of his parents, which obviously for a 19-year-old moving to another country, it's going to be a hard enough thing happening in your life anyway, let alone with everything else going on, moving to another country and trying to get into a strong side in Europe. He's not been afforded much game time. He's not been afforded much game time really at Arsenal, and has been left out of squads by Arteta, just frozen out. I think Arsenal they've said a lot about how it is only 19 and how him being left out of squads isn't a reflection that he's not going to make it at Arsenal. It's just being realistic that it's going to be a long-term process of him getting in and then staying at Arsenal and becoming the centre-back that he's got the talent to become. I think when he looks at Wesley Fofana, it will probably be kicking himself a bit because that was his partner. And Fofana's obviously taken to it so well, whereas Saliba's just not had the opportunity to do that. So I think a loan is exactly what he needs, and hopefully he'll be able to do well, although his first game didn't go quite to plan.
Yeah, anything to add on that, Alex?
Well, I think obviously he's only been at a professional footballer for 3 years. So he broke so he played. He don't even think he started every game in the two seasons that he was at St Etienne. So for him to, like you say, be left out of the Arsenal squad isn't a reflection on him as a player. He's a young lad. I think going back to France is a good move for him because at the end of the day, it's the league that he knows better. He's going to know French football better. It's all he's really experienced. So that might be better for him to just get to know the game and build up his confidence, because for a defender, I think confidence is in a way more important than talent at the start of your career. Just to be able to know that you're good enough to do it and that you can man-mark strikes and building your ability on the ball and stuff, I think, and learning how to take the pressure. So I think first team football is what matters, and first team football in a league that he knows, whereas if he was in the Premier League right now, where obviously he's a professional footballer, he knows how to play, but it's different, it's a different style of play, and he's only 19, so I think it's better that he's in France playing games at the end of the day, more than anything.
Would you not argue, I appreciate what you're saying, that it's good to be playing games, would it not be better in a sense for him to go maybe lower down the Premier League on loan or to a Championship club and actually learn English football?
Well, it depends on the player there, I think. It depends, because obviously, we were saying before, with the family thing, both his parents passing away, then maybe it's better for him in France. He might have other family members there as well to help support, and that there might be personal factors involved. I see what you mean, but I think that if he was to go to the Championship, I don't think the Championship is a good place to learn the English game, as I think that the Championship and the Premier League are worlds apart in terms of the average team you play against. So even if he goes out on loan to Norwich and he was to play every game for Norwich, he doesn't learn the English game in the Championship, because a lot of the strikers he comes up against are just the big blokes trying to out-muscle him and playing long ball football that is not going to help him develop as a player. Whereas if he's in France, it might be a bit better.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. The Premier League has definitely become less physical, if you know what I mean, but ultimately, the Championship is a better reflection of English football than Ligue 1. But yeah, the personal issues might be a big factor. You can't complain about him wanting to be in France if he said that. Yeah, I think a lot of Arsenal fans are frustrated, understandably, that a player who they bought for £27 million, I don't think has been on the bench. But in modern football, is £27 million for a 19-year-old centre-back that much? I also don't want to say it too loudly because it might come back to haunt me, but I also think Rob Holding's been playing quite well this year. And and Gabriel looked solid before his injury. Pablo Mauri has been unbelievable the last few games. So it's not I know Arsenal haven't been brilliant defensively. Well, I think their defence is up there, but I know it's not a team full of world-class defenders, but it's not necessarily been the easiest team to get into.
I do think there's definitely been an opportunity within the season for him to been playing in either the league or in other competitions that just hasn't...
Yeah, I suppose. When you see they've got 6 wins from 6 in the Europa League, I think, or they were unbeaten definitely, but they didn't really have much trouble in the Europa League. Yeah, like you say, he could have played in some of those games.
But he's also not going to displace, like, even though David Luiz hasn't been very good for Arsenal, like, he's not going to displace him out the side. And then, like you say, Holding's been good. I think it is actually, even though it's not a great Arsenal defence, he must have to do something pretty special to get into that team.
Yeah, and like you say, there's plenty of time for it as well. Yeah, so the next sort of big transfer, I think you boys will be quite happy with, I would think. Snodgrass going to West Brom from West Ham. Alex, your thoughts?
Yeah, so obviously as a player, he is really good. But I like, just, you know, put it simply, but I don't think we've signed him necessarily for his impact on the pitch. I think we've signed him for the personality behind him, because to me, like, Snodgrass doesn't, he's never seemed like someone who enjoys losing in, like, the best possible way. Like, he will do everything he can to, like, book everyone else's ideas. At, like, he, I think it's a mentality that he brings to the squad that we simply don't have at the moment. We have a losing mentality. We don't have a mentality of, like, oh, it's not all right to lose. It's kind of like, oh, we lost. Like, it's what we expected. And I think that he's been brought in to change that. And also, I think it might also be to intimidate a few of the players in the midfield, like, who their spot, where their spot isn't secure. Like, because I know he's not really going to play centre midfield, but you could put him in there. So that'll mean that players like Sawyers and Livermore will probably start putting in a bit more effort, because it does look like they're not. I don't mind saying that about footballers, but I feel like it's just the impact in the mentality that he's going to bring, more than necessarily what he's going to bring on the pitch, which is important to the club. And I think it is a really good sign, and I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, it's definitely not a very glamorous signing. It doesn't get any headlines on newspapers. However, I do think, as you've said, it will add a lot to the squad in general, and just gives us someone with a lot of experience, a lot of Prem experience that we're severely lacking. And sort of any additions to the squad for us.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I loved him at his time at Villa. I was gutted that we weren't able to keep him because we didn't go up. Like you say, just a fantastic character as well. Like, you see a lot of stuff off the pitch that he just seems to be a really good person to be around. Like, there's that video of him prank calling Fenner's on Soccer AM, and he's asking him to open it for Greggs in Scunthorpe. Like, that's what you want from a player. I always thought he was underused by West Ham, and I don't know if that was just because I wanted him to be at Villa, but last season he got 5 goals and 5 assists. He only started 17 games. Yeah, I just feel like he was massively underused. In the team that came 16th, I think that's so good. And it hurts me that he's not at Villa, no matter how much Villa will develop. Like, I will always want him at Villa just because of that season. I thought he was excellent for us. But yeah, just a good person to have around the dressing room, like you say. Obviously, David Moyes didn't see much in him. Obviously, they've got Yarmolenko and Philippe Anderson and people like that, but even they don't seem to get a look in. Jared Bowen's another one who's playing well. But yeah, I think it's strange that he didn't get more of a look in at West Ham. Speaking of West Ham, the next one of sort of highlighted as a big transfer potentially is Sebastian Haller. Ewan, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so I think it's a really good move for Haller. Obviously, it's not quite worked out for West Ham, and he's starting to get displaced with Antonio taking that striker spot. So I think a move to Ajax is good, and he's, as you see on the screen, he's scored after 7 minutes in his full debut for Ajax. And he is a quality player. I think this will do him well. He's still fairly young, so it's not like this is a career defining the West Ham season. However, for West Ham as a club, they're losing out on a lot of money. It's 25 million, I believe, a net loss for this transfer. And when you look at their squad, it is running mighty thin without Haller. They've not really got a backup striker. Then they've literally just got Mikel Antonio up front, and then maybe Jared Bowen can play up front, but you'd want him to be playing most of your games anyway. So if Antonio gets injured, they're a little bit stuffed now, I'd say.
Yeah, Alex, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it kind of shows, like, just West Ham seem to have a problem with strikers. Like, over the last, like, 15 years in the Premier League, like, how many strikers have West Ham had who have scored more than 10 goals a season?
Ricardo Vazte. Nah. Diafrasacco.
Diafrasacco got, like, 12, I think, 1 year.
Yeah,
Andy Carroll, I don't think, ever scored 10 goals in one season for West Ham. Yeah.
And Enna Valencia was good on FIFA.
Yeah, and like, he'd score the odd decent goal. But, like, I think it's just a striker curse that you have at West Ham when you go there. I think, like Ewan said, like, he showed signs of a player, and he is a decent player, but then he also came from Frankfurt, where he was up top with, I can't remember
who
he was up top with.
Jovic,
yeah. And they had a brilliant partnership. And then he came to West Ham, and he probably just had the season of his career, even though I know he's not that old. But he's come from Frankfurt, who were playing really good football, playing, I think, more to his system as well. And so I think moving to Ajax, because I think he prefers that sort of, like, passing on the ground sort of style. You know what I mean? Just, like, a bit more of a tiki-taka-esque kind of system. And obviously West Ham, they get a lot of crosses into the box, I think, at the moment. I think it just...
That's Thomas Souček.
Well, yeah. And I think that going to Ajax, the style of play will suit him more. So, as you guys said, it's a good move for him, like, personally.
Yeah, I think we touched on it in the record signing podcast, obviously, because he is West Ham's record signing. I argued that West Ham is a bit of a step down from Frankfurt in terms of where they're going to be competing, although West Ham is a pretty big club. And at Ajax, like you and said, like, where would Seb Haller rather be? Surely he'd rather be at Ajax. Like, it's a big win for him, I feel. But then I heard something, and the West Ham board have been known to be a bit dubious in recent years, but they came out and said it was too good to turn down. I think to say that, he scored 10 goals in 48 Premier League games, which for a £45 million player is
not good enough.
But ultimately, he's at an age where I don't think you can afford to lose 25 million on him, because there's definitely potential for him to become a dependable striker for West Ham. I think, yeah, like Ewan says, especially, like, Antonio seems to be first choice, which is fair enough because he's run at the end of last season, but without him, who have they got, really? So, yeah, definitely seems a better one for Haller than it does for West Ham, but West Ham fans who see him play every week might feel otherwise. So moving on to Charlie Austin, I'm sure you'll have more to say about this than I will, but I was a little bit surprised. I appreciate that he's probably on a big wage, as Alex will tell us, no doubt. But
70k a week. 70k a week, I promise.
Ultimately, like, he's just that sort of... I appreciate that his record hasn't been brilliant for West Brom, but I think he's just got that sort of instinct that you want for a player when you're trying to stay up. If something falls to him in the six-yard box, I'd certainly have him over Callum Robinson, but I'm sure, Alex, you seem fairly pleased about him being loaned back out to QPR.
Well, I don't think I'm necessarily pleased. I just think it wasn't working out at the Albion. I think he is, like, a little bit slow. Like, whenever he's come on, he's just not quite looked like, maybe even just how he looked last season. I think he is just a bit slow for the league. I'm not happy he's gone, but then I also think, like, for him as a bloke, it's probably quite good. Do you think that I wanted to see a bit more of him this season before we let him go? Because, like, it wasn't like written off that he had a bad time at the Albion. Because, like, he won us some games last year. Like, you, and I'm sure you remember, Blues away, he came on. We were losing 2-1. He scored a header and a fantastic volley outside the box, and, like, won us the game. So, you know, it's not like his career at Albion is a write off. But I get why we've done it again with, like, the wages, and maybe it's freeing up space for another striker, because we can link with players like Josh King, but obviously nothing's come of that. Yeah, Ewan, I'm sure you've got something else to say about it.
Yeah, I think, like, in some ways, if it was, we're putting Charlie Austin out on loan, however, there's going to be someone that comes in, then I'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. However, from what I've been hearing, it's going to be more likely that we're not going to get anyone, or not going to get anyone that's really of note, because we don't have the funds available to do that. So I sort of think it's kind of a bit short-sighted. Like, I think, is Carlin Grant still out at the moment, or
he'll be out, but only for like another 2 weeks.
Yeah, like even when he comes back, it's we're
Zabor comes back as well, but he is absolute dog shit.
Yeah, we haven't got too many options, and I think a player of Austin's ability, and as you said, like with his instinct, we're not going to create that many chances. So if we've got someone that can nick us a goal or get something, it will mean a lot. Each goal means a lot for the Baggies at the moment. So I do think it might be a bit of a poor decision, and may have been better to keep him around the squad.
Yeah, I'm not happy about him going, but I'm happy for him.
Yeah,
yeah. I think a lot of Premier League clubs would be like, yeah, he can kind of like, why would you let him go because of his potential to keep you in the league? But I think with a club like West Brom that operates so tightly financially, I can kind of see it. I'm sure QPR will be happy to have him back. Obviously, that was where he sort of made his name. I think he scored 18 goals when they got promoted into the Premier League.
He's one of the only few players to get relegated and score 20
off. Yeah, I do sympathise with him a bit. Because I can't believe no one bought him after that season, because he was brilliant. And I feel like that year in the Championship where he was playing obviously at a lower standard kind of hurt his development. If he did have another year in the Premier League being sharp, then who knows? But I don't know.
He still scored goals that year though.
Yeah. But I do think when West Brom got him, I thought it was a good sign, especially for 4 million, but obviously just hadn't worked out.
Well, similar... he was only 4 million because he was on 100k at Southampton.
So you say, anyway. But,
He was on 100k. He was. He is West Brom's most... It is West Brom's joint highest paid player ever.
Alex's dad is an agent. That's how he knows this. Sticking with the theme of didn't really work out. Timothy Fosu-Mensa, probably not, didn't surprise many people that he's been sold. But for me, 1.5 million, I know he didn't have long on his contract, seems ridiculous. If I was buying Leverkusen, I'd be very happy. For a player who can play, I've seen him play on either side, right or left back, and he's done well. I think Ajax snapped him up when he was very young. I think he was in the Ajax Academy for 8 or 9 years. And if anyone knows a young player, it's Ajax. And then Man U decided to take him on. Obviously, they don't take on bad players. But whatever reason, it hasn't really worked out for him. I don't know. I just feel, obviously, they've got options there, especially with the signing of Tellez, and Brandon Williams looks a prospect. But I don't know. I thought this was a strange one. What did you think, Ewan?
Yeah, I think especially as they're in the market for a backup right back, I think Brandon Williams could probably do that. But I know they were looking at sending him out on loan as well. I think because Fosu-Mensa, he was like not willing to go into contract talks with the club. So they sort of had to get rid of him. And he is 23, so he probably does need to move on for himself to get that game time, because he's not really getting it. I think he's only had 30 appearances at United, despite, I think, being there for a good 4 or 5 years, maybe. I think he made his debut with Marcus Rashford. So he's been there since 2016.
Alex at that game.
Yeah, I wanted to say it, but I thought I wouldn't interrupt.
I think a lot of United fans...
It was date night.
You were saying about his versatility. I know a lot of United fans wanted to see him as a holding midfielder as well. And obviously, with where he's come from, is like you taught to play in all positions. And positions. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a shame that United have had to let him go. I know one of our friends who's a United fan was upset because he did really like Fosu-Mensa. However, I think met each other a lot. But for his career, I'd say it's the right move. If you're not getting a look in, you're 23, you probably need to move and get first team football. And I'm sure he'll be a great player in the future and do well.
I've no, like, more strange on United's part, I felt. I mean, like, they can afford to let him go for so cheap, obviously. But I think, as well, he's been in, like, the Netherlands setup since under-15s, I think. I think he's come out of the move really well. I think ultimately he's still moved to one of the biggest clubs in Germany. And I'll admit to not knowing the Bayern Leverkusen fullbacks too well. But I assume he'll be in and around the starting 11 every week. Alex, anything to add?
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, is the fact that we haven't really spoke about the fact that Leverkusen have signed him, if you know what I mean. We just talked about how United have sold him. Like, I'm not digging, don't worry. Yeah, look, I think it's a weird signing, considering, like, he hasn't had loads of first-team football in the grand scheme of things. Like, he's 23, so he is still young. But, like, Leverkusen are third in the league. Like, you'd think that if they're making signings, I mean, I know, obviously, with coronavirus as well, it does make signings harder. But you'd think that maybe if they're third in the league, they might be more focusing on signing people who are definitely going to bolster their starting lineup, like who are going to be sort of like pushing, like the someone who's maybe a bit better than the club, if you know what I mean, to try and push further on them. Because they're not, I think they're a few points behind Bayern and they've played a game more, but you never know, like, they could still have a title challenge on their hands. So I think, like, I mean, it's obviously a good sign of the future, but it's like, if I was Leverkusen, probably not what I would be focusing on.
Well, I think when you can snap him up for as cheap as they yeah. could, it's a steal, really.
He is so cheap.
If you offered me a Ajax Academy and Man U Academy graduate for $1.5 million and he can play two or three positions, I'd definitely take him.
Oh, I'm not saying they shouldn't sign
him. I know what you're saying, and they've got that big Kai Havertz cash, but... Mm. But no, I definitely think they've come out of it well.
I'm just surprised that that's where they've gone for.
He was on loan at Fulham, wasn't he? I think in the season they got relegated, but I think he was pretty hampered by injuries.
Yeah, didn't and he was at Palace as well.
Yeah.
I think Palace liked him.
But yeah, I'd like to see him do well. But yeah, doesn't always work that way. But yeah, such is the nature of the January transfer window, that is about all the noticeable deals that have been done.
Especially with Corona.
Certainly in the top five leagues. It certainly seems like the January transfer window, the deals that do happen are big, but it's because it's an emergency window. People are less likely to sell in January now because they don't feel they've got the time to replace them, which is fair enough. But always there seems to be rumours flying about. And I think the big one is that coming out of the Guardian today that Leipzig will not be selling Upamecano. Despite the fact that he has a clause in his contract which they say can allow him to leave for $37.4 million in the summer, which is ridiculous for a centre-back of his quality. Every time I've seen him play for Leipzig, I think he's been phenomenal. I think it was against PSG in the Champions League last year. That was the first time I watched him. I thought I watched Harry Maguire, an alleged £80 million centre-back, play for 5 years, and I've seen this guy play better already. I think they only got him in for €10 million. It was off Salzburg, I think, which I know is kind of a sister club.
It's basically nothing.
Any thoughts on this one, Alex?
Not gonna lie, I haven't seen loads of him. Loads of his football, because I don't watch a lot of.
Go watch some Leipzig. Go watch some Leipzig.
Are they good?
Bloody good. He's so good.
Well, and also I don't watch loads of Champions League, obviously, especially right now. But I think at the end of the day, it's kind of weird that they're saying they won't sell him, because I think people, like, because obviously with the price, it's kind of like, get rid of him now, you can maybe find someone else quicker. I mean, I know it's January and it might be harder, but...
Well, I think, like, sort of what you're saying with... sort of saying no to selling him in January, like, Leipzig have made it quite clear that they are a selling club, and if it makes financial sense, they will sell. So I think, like, if someone comes up with a bid that's significantly more than the summer price tag would be, then there is, I presume there is still potential, but then why would you come up with that bid when you can wait until the summer and get him on an absolute steal?
Well, yeah. I think the thing is with Leipzig as well, that their whole club is set up for financial profit. Like, that's the whole brand of the Red Bull brand, like, really. So I know I kind of get what you're saying when you say that they could sell him. If they, like, why wouldn't they sell him now for more than the summer price? So
I know what you're saying, like, clubs will stick around for that. But for me, it seems like, reading it, like, Leipzig backed themselves to be able to convince him to stay, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Yeah.
I think... obviously they lost Werner and they don't really seem to have been hindered by it. They got through a very tough Champions League group. I think Nagelsmann plays some brilliant football. I think it is difficult because I think any club in the world would want him, especially at the age of 22.
Yeah.
Because he is excellent from whenever I've seen him play. But yeah, it's a strange one, definitely.
Another thing I want to say, though, is so from a financial point of view, is it better off that they keep him and he helps them in the league to a higher position, which will obviously help their finances, like if he helps them qualify for Champions League, maybe even for a title push, is that more valuable than the price tag they'd get for him? Because it will be hard to replace in this window, and I don't know that much about their squad depth. And to be fair, like I know I haven't seen loads of him, but what I have seen, he is a decent player. It's not going to be like they're just going to be able to whack someone off the bench and they just recreate that quality. So maybe it is important to keep him for footballing reasons as well.
Yeah,
as
they've got Konate as well, who's another fantastic prospect. But they also play three at the back typically. So obviously that's another centre back they'd need, if you know what I mean. So
yeah,
I can see both sides of it really. Like if you're a big club and you know he's got that clause, why would you buy him in January for potentially more? Because he's definitely more than the £37 million player.
Yeah, at 22.
But I was a little bit surprised in the sense that he signed a new contract in the summer, but that contract was only 3 years. So you can kind of see it in a sense, if you know what I mean. If it was a 5-year contract, you'd probably think he's not going anywhere. But
yeah.
But I'd like to see him play at Leipzig, obviously, but I'd love to see him in the Premier League also, because I think he'd be brilliant. But going the other way, one of the big talking points of this window, especially since the appointment of Pochettino, has been Dele Alli potentially going on loan to PSG. Daniel Levy's come out and said that they will block any deal to sell him. I think partially because of their injuries last year, they got hurt so badly and they don't want their squad to be hurt by a coronavirus crisis. But PSG have said they're hopeful of it and he's their top target this summer. Alex, do you think that is something that would benefit them?
Well, I think it would benefit PSG because, I mean, they've got a decent field, but then I think as well, like, Dele Alli, if he's on form, like, he can be an absolute world beater. And if you've got a manager who will inspire him, which I think Pochettino would, then I think, like, his ability would go so much more because Jose Mourinho does. And I think, like, for him as a person, I think it would be, like, or him as a player, it would be a really good move because even just a loan, it's supposedly going to be a loan move, isn't it?
Daniel Levy's apparently said they're not willing to let him go.
For the reasons like you said, though, isn't it?
But Mourinho's shown no interest in playing him, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, he's not getting any games up, so he's not going to get any better. If anything, might get worse. Whereas if he goes to PSG, gets maybe 10 goals and a few assists or something, which would be pretty big, but it is also PSG. If he can get that would really increase his confidence. And either for Spurs, then it would increase his value so they can sell him to PSG for an inflated price of what he's necessarily worth, or he comes back almost like a brand new player and then his form, he brings back his form from a few years ago and he's like a new player for Spurs and starts scoring and gets back into the first team.
Ewan, any thoughts on this one?
Obviously he's an immensely talented player, and with Poch at PSG, I'm sure like he would be getting a fair amount of game time and be in Poch's plans if he wants to bring him in. And I think Alex said like it would make sense. He's not getting played at all, and I want to see him do well. I think he's got a place. I'd like to see him fight for his place in the England squad. I think for the Euros it's probably a bit late, but well, unless he goes to PSG and performs excellently.
Or the Euros get pulled off.
Yeah, for tournaments in the future, I think he's definitely one that will be in and around the squad or starting 11. But yeah, I think he needs a move away to reinvigorate some form. I think when Jose came in to start with, it looked like he was playing well and was going to kick on. However, he's been frozen out. I think you can see there he's played 77 minutes of Premier League football, and his most recent was a start against Marine, who obviously you're going to start some players, but it's one of them. He's just not getting the game time and needs to go somewhere to get it.
It's a difficult one. If you want game time, there's certainly like worse clubs to go to than PSG. I think every time I see PSG as well, their midfield, although as good as they are, their midfield, there isn't a lot of spark there. Like they seem to enjoy playing a lot of defensive-minded midfielders. Like Danilo, Marquinhos have both played there, despite also playing centre-back. Got Idrissa Gueye, Verratti. Verratti's excellent, obviously, but he's also...
Verratti played as a false 10 the other week, I remember, which was a really weird...
Really?
Yeah. Considering I would call him like more of a holding midfielder than an attacking one. He played in that false nine, not false ten. It was a really strange move.
But then they play like that and they have people like Julian Draxler on the bench. And then there's talk of Julian Draxler potentially leaving. But you see it quite a lot when managers take over, they look to get someone in they know and that they've worked with. And I think that's what Poch is doing here, just to get some sort of familiarity there. I'm sure if you offered Dele Alli the chance to live in Paris for a few months and play with Mbappe and Neymar rather than watch the Spurs games from the stand, he'd definitely take it. Daniel Levy won't want to see him go because obviously he's got that talent where he could just explode in France and they wouldn't be able to keep hold of him. He's played 37 times for England, which for a 24-year-old, who I don't think played a game in the whole of 2020. For England is ridiculous. Joint most goal contributions in the Premier League after 100 games, and in the 16-17 season you got 18 goals and 7 assists in 37 games, which is just ridiculous. I know he's playing as more of a second striker, but the talent is so clearly there, and I do think long term he's going to be a big part of the England plans, whoever the manager is, because hopefully it won't be Southgate.
I think for Levy, with what you're probably going to get for Dele at the moment, sort of how he's been or lack of being able to be himself, like you're just not going to get anywhere near as much as you'd value a player like him.
Yeah, massively. Like
also, like probably knowing that Mourinho isn't, like if you look at his record, he probably won't be there for that long. It could be worth Levy trying to hold on to a player as quality as Dele Alli until Mourinho is gone, and then most managers will have Alli in their setup.
Yeah, because like a couple of years ago, I think we were looking at him sort of how we look at Foden now. Like it's not a debate; like they are going to be a superstar, and it hasn't materialized. Like you say, there was a burst when Mourinho first came in, and we thought, "Oh right, he's going to get the best out of Alli." And it's gone completely the other way. And there was a lot of stuff in the Amazon Prime documentary calling him a lazy trainer. And although it sort of seemed light-hearted and stuff, it obviously seems to have affected Mourinho, who does obviously look for work rate a lot in his players. But I don't know, it's an interesting one. I think it's something that will go on throughout the window. But yeah, moving closely to the other side of London, Arsenal have said they will not pay, they will not be buying Emiliano Buendia because of the fee that Norwich have asked for, according to the Daily Express. Alex, as you're at Carrow Road.
I was going to say, I'm sure he's warming up over there. He has been absolutely amazing this year. I don't know the stats, but I think it's like a goal and assist like every 60 minutes, a goal or an assist every 60 minutes or something, which is ridiculous. Last year, I thought he was probably, if not Norwich's best player, like in the top three. Like he had one of like the highest chances created in the league, and he was playing for Norwich. Like he's so creative, which is obviously what Arsenal are missing, which he's doing in the Championship now, and it's different. But Norwich are also running away with the league. They're about 6 points clear, I think. I think if I was him, I wouldn't leave. But if I was Arsenal, I would be trying to get hold of him, even if he's not as a starter, even if he's someone who's sort of like maybe starts 10, 15 games and then comes on as a sub in the rest. Kind of like almost like Thomas Rosicki kind of thing, like a decent squad player who can do a job. I obviously don't know the fee that Norwich are asking for, but I think it would be a good signing for Arsenal, and I would be fighting a bit for him.
What do you think of him?
He's definitely a very talented player and is too good for a team like Norwich, who's going to be Championship and then potentially struggling in the Premiership next year.
I think a club like West Brom, or is that basically just supporting the same team?
What's that, sorry?
Is it just basically the same supporting West Brom then?
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, I think as Alex was alluding to, he was, I think he was second in terms of big, it was either chances created or key passes per 90 in the league last year. So he's clearly got a phenomenally creative attacking output. And I think he could push on and be good for a mid-table team like Arsenal. So yeah, I think it would be a good move. Do you know the fee that they were asking for? Or
I'm seeing 40 million, but there was nothing in the Express article I looked at.
I think 40 million is a lot, and it is a bit of a risk, especially in these times when there is also players like Hussein Aouar, who you could buy instead, who's probably more likely to become a world star.
Wendy is not even 25, so it's not exactly like he's old.
Like, who would you rather have, him or Hassim Ouar? But I know what you're saying. For me, he starts in that Arsenal team.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I know Smith Rowe's had a run of form, but for someone so young, like, how sustainable is it? Whereas this guy is obviously Norwich. Were poor last year, but obviously he's more experienced. And it's a strange one as well, because Norwich don't seem to keep hold of their players, if you know what I mean. Norwich are quite open about the fact they don't spend a lot of money. They prefer to bring players through. I think you've seen that with Ben Godfrey. They got 20, 25 million for him. I'd argue he's probably worth more than Buendia, if you know what I mean, especially if he's English. I think he's been excellent for Everton this year as well. Jamal Lewis, I thought, was a good signing for Newcastle. So it's a strange one, but I think Arsenal pulled out of the Ouar deal in the summer because they weren't prepared to pay 40, 45 million. So I couldn't see him paying it for a Norwich player, with all due respect to Norwich. But yeah,
I think
someone in the Premier League should have him.
I think for Ouar, what it was is, I think the Lyon president came out and said, if you're paying 72 million for Pepe, then you're going to have to pay at least near there for Ouar.
That was a fair argument, actually.
But yeah, as you said, he's definitely Premier League quality. And I think he'll be, if he's not there in January at the end of this window, then he'll definitely be there in summer, whether Norwich get promoted or not.
Yeah, yeah. And another one, sort of the opposite of that, really, is that Tariq Lamptey is very close to signing a long-term contract at Brighton. There's apparently been some interest from Bayern Munich, who've been very, who've obviously seen something in him, which is fair enough, because I think he's been excellent this year. You and your thoughts on the fact he might just commit his future to Brighton?
I think it is a smart move. Some way, like, sort of is making sure he gets the foundation before he moves on to a bigger project. And if you're playing week in, week out, you're playing well, you're doing a lot for the team, then I don't see why not continue that for another couple of years. He is so young, so it's not like he needs that move to a big club to prove himself. Yeah, he can continue at the sort of building upon what he's already done, improving his game, getting a weekly football, and rather than making that risk of going to a big club now and potentially either being stuck as second or even third choice, or potentially being remembered as, you've gone to that big club, but you failed there. Like, I think if it's working well, like, keep going for a few years and sort of carry on, get.
That emotional intelligence degree is obviously serving Graham Potter well, if he's keeping players like this at the club. But yeah, I think he's been Brighton's best player this year. He came through Chelsea Academy, so he obviously knows what it's like to be around a big club. With all due respect to Reece James, I think the fact that they released Lamptey ahead of him is questionable.
I would say it's questionable.
Yeah, I don't know. And like, if Brighton if Bayern, not Brighton, do have any weakness, I would say it's right back if Josh Kimmich is playing in midfield, if you know what I mean. Like that's the one area over Pavard, if you know what I mean, where you could fit someone like that in. Yeah, Alex, any thoughts?
I'd say if he's going to go to a big club, like I kind of always think that anyone who's going to go to a big club as a young player should go to Dortmund, because you're almost guaranteed game time, like they will take a chance on you. But like you said, like you could see if he finished this season strong and then he goes to Bayern and has a good preseason, he could displace Pavard out that side, I think. And if, obviously, as you said, if Kimmich is playing in midfield. So I think it's a case of I would leave Brighton if I'm going to a big club and I know that I'm getting 10, 15 starts a season in the league. Like, otherwise, I don't think it's worth it. I think it's better off that he stays at Brighton and commits a future with them and just develops his game by just playing first team football all the time.
Yeah, and like, I suppose, but then you see like Alphonso Davies on the left-hand side. And it's obviously, it's a similar kind of, like that high energy kind of player, strong going forward, but can also defend really well. So you could definitely see him fitting into that mould. I do also feel like sort of contracts are becoming less and less, not relevant, but they have less of an impact, if you know what I mean. Like the fact that someone signs a 5-year contract doesn't really keep them at the club. It's a way for the holding club to keep them to cash in if someone wants to come in for them, if you know what I mean.
It just increases their fee.
Yeah, and especially if Brighton are like flirting with relegation this season. So yeah, sticking with the team of English right backs, the Sun have reported today Kieran Trippier's 10-week ban, I believe it was, for gambling. That stopped a potential move to Man United. They're apparently very interested. And obviously now he's not going to be playing for such a long period of time. They don't want him. You and your thoughts on this one? This would have happened?
Yeah, I think it would have been a pretty good move for Man U. Obviously, we've all seen Trippier's quality over the years, and especially in the World Cup, which was great. But yeah, less talk on that, the better then, I guess. But yeah, United, they sort of need someone that will be pushing Wan-Bissaka and also that can have a bit more of an attacking output than Wan-Bissaka. I know you are a bit of a fundamentalist that a defender should defend, which I feel like everyone should agree with. However, having someone like Trippier in there that is pretty good at everything isn't a bad thing, and I think he would have been a good fit at United. I think the actual ban that he's got, looking into it a bit further, is kind of ridiculous, the severity for so little of a few texts in a WhatsApp chat where he's sort of alluding to the fact that he's going to Atletico. But then it's like, if you're a professional footballer, you are going to tell your friends where you go in. And I think he asked one of them to go to sign with him. And if you've not got anyone else there that in your family or tight knit circle that can, well, obviously you're going to ask a friend that will go over there and sign with you. So what do you think, Al?
I do kind of agree with what you're saying, but it's the fact that I think in a lot of the texts he was like, "Oh, lads, like, put some money on this." Like, he's actively encouraging them to bet on it.
The articles that I've read, he didn't actively encourage it. I think the only one where he'd have reasonable suspicion is one of his mates said, "Should I lump some money on it?" He said, "Oh, yeah." However, I think the overall money that was won from it, and I guess it's the principal rather than the amount, it was like 1,500 quid. So it wasn't a grand conspiracy where they're trying to defraud the betting companies.
Yeah, but then also I think there's other stuff going on about it as well. And I also think like they do need to be really harsh on this kind of stuff because it stops anyone else getting involved in it.
I think what I've heard is
a principal thing.
What are you expecting a footballer to do? Are you expecting them every conversation they have when they speak to a mate about where they're going, they'll say, "Oh yeah, by the way, boys, I've got a transfer here, but you need to make sure you don't bet on this. Like, it's a like if you were moving jobs, you'd talk to your friends about it. I know it's slightly different, but it's like where's the line drawn? And when it's so little money, I think it's just a bit harsh. Like, there's so much more that the FA or other organizations could do to sort of punish unfair betting or predatory betting, and this is just something that they can easily come down upon rather than actually fixing issues with it.
Have you guys ever heard the story of these? I'm pretty sure it's true because it was on the Peter Crouch podcast. So it's got to be. Where these lads were out and they saw Glenn Johnson, who was like rumored to be leaving Liverpool at the time. They were like, "Oh, like, are you leaving Liverpool?" And he was like, "Yeah, like, that's pretty much certain." And they're like, "Oh, where are you going?" And they were like, "Oh, to be honest, like, it's most likely going to be Portsmouth." They were like, "Oh, should we put some money on it?" And he was like, "Well, I think that's where I'm going to be going." So this group of lads all put about, like, I think it was around at the mark of about $1,000 to $2,000. Like, all called in together to put him going to Portsmouth, and then a week later he signed at Stoke. So
yeah, I'm sure they were happy. Like, the WhatsApp messages I saw looked pretty innocuous. It was like one of his mates went, "Shall I lump on you move?" And then sort of seemingly half joking. It's difficult to tell over text. And Trippier sort of laughed, but then he was like, "You can if you want." And, like, you don't know, like, what situation his mate's been in, whether he's trying to help him out. And it's difficult. Like, it's difficult because, like, online betting's become such a big thing as well. I think the thing, like you say, about it wasn't a lot of money rig, I think that's irrelevant because he could have betted on it as much as he wanted to and he could have won potentially loads off it. I think it's just a bit naive for a player in his position to be doing, if you know what I mean. But then seeing the messages, they're pretty harmless, but it's the life of a footballer, I think, especially when betting's involved. But for me, it just sounds... I get what you're saying about right back, like, depth and stuff, but I think Trippier is too good to be on anyone's bench, really. I don't know if the English press like to glamorise the fact that English players don't like being in England, or whether Trippier would want to come back because he thinks it gives him a better chance of playing a bigger part in the Euros. I don't know, but I don't know why he'd leave one of the best teams in Europe and come to Man United, with all due respect to Man U.
I think Atletico aren't quite on the same level as Man United, though.
They're a better team at the minute, though, and he's only just gone there. Like, I don't see why there's all these rumours about him leaving, to be honest. He might, if he openly said he wants to leave, then fair enough, but...
I think, if he did go to Man U, like, I could see him displacing Wan-Bissaka. I think because he is a bit older and we've got so much young talent, he kind of almost gets forgotten that he actually is, like, a top quality player and is just not quite as, like, glamorous as thinking of a young prospect coming through. But I think he could be quality for United if he was their first choice.
He is quality. I'd probably have him over Wan-Bissaka in the England team, but I don't think Man United would want to start him over someone they paid £50 million for.
Like, yeah.
But it's a tricky one. Moving on, the Times have said that Spurs are unlikely to extend Gareth Bale's loan deal. Alex, were you surprised by this at all?
Not really, no. I think, like, when I've seen him play, he looks fine, but I think Tottenham wanted the Gareth Bale that they had, and I think he isn't that player. He doesn't start very often. I know he gets a fair few chances off the bench, but, like, the amount of starts he gets, he doesn't start every game. He doesn't even start.
He doesn't start any game.
Yeah. I was going to say, not hardly ever starts, but I don't know. He bought out. And it's like, well, the amount of wages they'll be paying, the loan fees they'll be paying, will be so expensive that it's probably just not worthwhile having him. Like, they've got other players in the squad who are going to contribute the same, if not more. And from a financial perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense to not extend the spell or go for him on a permanent, which I think has been talked about. But I think that's kind of been vetoed.
Yeah, for me, I feel I kind of understand why they've got him. If Real Madrid are willing to pay 380 grand a week for him to play for someone else, and Spurs have got to pay 220, which are the numbers that are apparently being thrown around, then that seems...
Well, is that mean Gareth Bale's on over half a million a week?
He's on 600 a week, yeah. Yeah, and yes, but apparently
Real Madrid... Is Charlie Austin being on 70 then?
Apparently Real Madrid are paying 380 of it. But yeah, and obviously it's a ridiculous amount of money, but I think for the money that they get off, they would have got off Bale shirt sales and stuff. I see the investment, and also Mourinho would probably like someone of Bale's winning mentality around the dressing room, someone who's been there and done it. I agree. I don't think he is a better player at this moment than Maurer or Moore even, or Bergwijn. And obviously Son's untouchable, and rightly so.
He's probably a bit unlucky for that as well, to be fair.
I just think, like, looking at him, he's a different kind of build to what he was, if you know what I mean. Like, after watching the first few games at Spurs, like, it was obvious his pace had sort of gone, which is fair enough with the injuries he's had. Like, he'd be more of a backup striker, but even Vinicius seems to have done better than him. But then I kind of get it from a financial point of view in the attraction that comes with having Gareth Bale at your club. I know Daniel Levy's quite shrewd like that. I mean, you might know a bit more about the business aspect of it, but...
No, I think, yeah, as you've said, it's definitely going to have helped with shirt sales, and it just sort of... It's a bit of a statement for Tottenham, who are sort of in the shadows because of their sort of lack of trophies and everything, to have someone like Gareth Bale come back.
They won the League Cup in 2008.
Oh, yeah. point proven. I'll shut up then. Having Gareth Bale around the dressing room and just at your club, it does send signals and messages to the world. I think for Bale now, you're not starting, and I think with more time goes on, it just makes it more unlikely for you not to start at Tottenham. So I don't see why he'd want to extend the loan spell. And I don't know, now for him, maybe it's sort of time to look at options in other leagues, like the Chinese league or the MLS. I think MLS have moved away from signing older players and are now looking at younger players for their designated player spots, but maybe the Chinese league and just earn a lot of money for Bale.
Don't quote me on it, but there might be exemptions and stuff, but I've read something that the Chinese league are capping wages at 54,000 a week.
You are right there.
That's a no-brainer. And just for me, like, his attitude towards being at Real Madrid, I don't think he'd want to be anywhere other than England, if you know what I mean. Who knows, maybe he'll go to Cardiff, but somehow I can't see it. But yeah,
he seems more of a Swansea boy to me.
I don't see where he goes from here. Like, I think Jamie Carragher said it, like, we all gave Zidane so much stick for his treatment of Bale, and so far we've seen nothing from Bale to suggest that Zidane was wrong. I don't know where he goes from here, because I don't think Spurs are the sort of club that will just keep paying his wages, and rightly so. I think Man U wanted him for a while, but I don't think they'll have any interest in looking at his performances this season.
They're the only club you look at and think, yeah, they could pay his wages and could potentially get him, but then he's just not good enough for them. Like,
obviously City could pay his wages, but I don't even think he gets on the City bench at the minute, really.
No, but when also you say, like, go to China and earn money, like, obviously avoid it, despite the price cap thing, he's on 600k a week. You can't really get much more than that, you know.
Not necessarily get more, but match it, because I can't see Gareth Bale thinking, oh yeah, I'll go to a mid-table Premier League side.
But I can't see him saying, I'm going to go live on the other side of the world.
From a financial aspect, like, anyone who signs him, like, even him himself, will know that he won't be signing for 600k a week, but he probably won't accept much less than 400. You know what I mean? Like,
it is tough.
Maybe that's just such a big wage that I don't think many people could pay.
Yeah, he'll just give up with football and retire.
Yeah, maybe it's a complex one. Maybe he'll just enter the Bermuda Triangle of football. Maybe he'll become player coach at Derby. Who knows? But sticking with the theme of big wages, maybe Mesut Ozil could finally get his move. Arsenal, as you might be able to see there, if you've got the old YouTube, are willing to sell him to Fenerbahce. This one seems to have gone on for a while. There's a lot with the Turkish seem to have a liking for Ozil because of some of the things he's sort of said that he's got in trouble with Germany for what he said about Turkey and defending them. Obviously, Fenerbahce, you might not think of the in terms of the contract Ozil's on, wouldn't necessarily be able to pay it, but obviously they had Van Persie when he left Man United, so they obviously there's obviously some money there. Ewan, do you see this one working out potentially? Do you think Ozil could get his move?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely time for him to leave Arsenal and go somewhere else. And I know he's been flirting with a move to Turkey for quite a while, but he is a massive name in Turkey, I think, because of his heritage as well. I think he's half Turkish or was definitely born in Turkey or something along those lines. So in terms of commercial revenue, I'm sure Fenerbahce would get a lot from the fans and from shirt sales. I think it would be a good move for him. There's not that many eyes looking at the Turkish league, but he could help them in European competitions. And I think he's definitely still capable of having a few years of playing well in European competitions. I don't think he's just going to go there and rot away. I think he can be an important player for them and would be motivated to do so. I think it would be a good move for him, and he just needs to go anywhere. He's not playing at Arsenal, so he needs to go.
Yeah, Alex, we'll go to our political expert. What do you think?
I was actually going to avoid the politics of it because I don't think it's something that really should affect football. Obviously, he said a lot of stuff that's made him unfavourable in terms of like how like China with the concentration camps and stuff, which I'm not going to touch on, but I don't think he was in the wrong for saying. But going from a football perspective, I think he is someone who could go to Turkey. He's got Turkish parents, doesn't he? I think he played for like Turkey under 21s. But he is someone who I think would kind of like appreciate that league maybe more so than the average like footballer would. Especially because there is still competition there with like Beşiktaş and Galatasaray. And I feel like there's another side I'm forgetting about.
Istanbul Beşiktaş.
Istanbul Beşiktaş.
Maybe. I've not actually heard them.
They're in the Champions League this year, your big mount.
Oh, yeah. But...
your big goose.
All right.
Shows how much he knows.
I've got better footballing knowledge than you.
Yeah, you do with the Championship and Premiership 2000 to 2009.
True. Very true.
Yeah, I will give you, Ewan. You've got the champion. You smashed me on Champions League. But on English football in general, I reckon I've got you. Anyway, unimportant.
Turned into quite a cock off.
I just don't get why he's not in the Arsenal team. Like, I just don't understand, like, why they don't give him a go. Like, I know he has periods where he goes missing and stuff. But at the end of the day, he's a world-class player, and Arsenal need a creative player. So why don't they just put him back in the squad? So obviously in January, you can revamp your 25-man squad or whatever it is.
I don't know. I think people have a bit of a short memory, to be honest. I think everyone's, like, yes, Arsenal need a creative player, but I think everyone forgets, like, how lazy and, like, Ozil's been, and he's like, I know he's never like a box to box, but just his general attitude towards playing for Arsenal is just not on, especially at a club like Arsenal. I would not want to see him in an Arsenal shirt again.
If you were an Arsenal,
the only criticism of Arsenal I'd have is that they let him get away with it. I think over the last 5 or so years, it's been such a comfortable club to be at. It's just like it feels like you can get away with things, which sounds ridiculous, but like,
no, I get what
that's,
you mean.
That story of Evra saying to Van Persie, welcome to a man's club, and like Van Persie initially being offended by it, but then apparently seeing what he meant, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't know if it was just because Wenger was there so long that players just sort of fell into a routine, but then the same thing was with Emery. Like, there's just, I don't know, there's just like, you think of that like Invincibles team, and obviously that's one of the best teams ever, but like, they're just so, as good as they were to watch, like, they were so physical and so tough. Like, players like Lehmann and Vieira and like Tony Adams before that, such like big characters, and now they just seem, there's just like a softness to them, like you feel like you can get at them, which there never was before.
Yeah, no, but that's a problem within the club, isn't it? That's not necessarily just pitch wise.
Yeah, but I think that's sort of allowed Ozil to not be the world class level he was at Arsenal and kind of get away with it.
Well, he has an excuse to not be, because also he's also in a position where the rest of the team around him have never been really that good, so he can just be like, oh, well, look at what I'm dealing with.
He
can hide.
He was fantastic in his first year, was it, where he got
for a couple of years, like when they had Sanchez, and
then he'd have the odd purple patch where he'd just get like 6 assists in 4 games, and then he wouldn't do anything for the rest of the year.
Well, I think like even if he's playing well, like even if he's not playing well, he's always going to get assists just because he's got that vision. Mm. He sees passes that other people don't really. Mm. Like I think he was like, he was 1 or 2 off the assist record. I saw it the other day with like 10 games left to go, and I think Giroud didn't score for the rest of the season or something. And like that.
Yeah, Arsenal fans are still annoyed about that.
Yeah, but
even though it's Don Rhee who holds the record anyway.
Yeah, I suppose. But anyway, yeah, moving on. Just a couple of quick ones, really. So Sassuolo, that's in Serie A in Italy. They've said they are not prepared to accept any bids for Manuel Locatelli, who's been a top target for Man City in this window. He's 23 years of age. He spent 10 years at Milan, obviously including his youth career. He didn't sign when he was 13. And he left there when Timmy Bakayoko was loaned in because he felt that he wasn't trusted by Milan. And City are after him, but apparently it's a no-go. But knowing City, they'll probably just come in with 50 million in the summer and sign him and play him on the bench. But also we've got RB Salzburg striker Patson Daka has been apparently been offered to West Ham. He's keen to a move to the Premier League. He scored 15 goals in 17 games this season. And he's said to be who they're looking at for their replacement for Haller. We won't spend too much time on them because we admit to not knowing a great deal about them. Moving on, a bit more local. Villa are said to be interested in David Brooks. They're looking to bring him in this window. I'll admit, I haven't watched loads of him. I think he was very impressive when he first burst onto the scene with Bournemouth. And he's been in and around the Wales team ever since. But when I read it as a Villa fan, it didn't fill me with excitement. It wasn't the area I'd be looking to strengthen, I think. Although El Ghazi's form, I don't think is massively sustainable at the minute, as well as he's been playing, he would be started ahead of him. I think Grealish obviously would be the first choice in that position if you're playing him as a winger. You then got Traore and Trezeguet when he's back from injury. Alex, I think you've seen a bit more of him than me. Any thoughts on him?
So Brooks, he is quite young still, but then he's not necessarily young enough to warrant maybe him sort of coming in for the future. He's sort of like one of them now. Like if you were to sign him, you'd want him to be on the cusps of the first team. And I think if Villa want to carry on with their progression, then I don't think he's the man necessarily to be coming in as a starter. I think he's sort of, I'd probably say, with a few games getting into the squad and stuff and a bit of confidence, he's probably sort of same sort of quality as El Ghazi and Traore, in the sense that he can produce. Like the general, like, well, that like odd moment where he's like, yeah, that was good, but I don't think he's consistent enough to really warrant a starting position for a side like Villa or a especially for a side like Villa are trying to progress to. He's got at least 5 assists, I think, this season for Bournemouth, who are, I believe, 2nd, but then the Championship changes a lot at the moment, except for Norwich at the top, which is pretty consistent. And he has been fairly important, but he's still not been like their most important attacking player. Isn't that showing enough that he's not really ready for a move to a mid-table to Europe Premier League side? Because that is such a huge step up that I don't think he'd be ready for.
Yeah, I think it's like it's one of them as well. Like, I think against the top 6 teams, I'd probably be going for Trezeguet. I'd want him to start for Villa because he's got a bit more.
The work ethic.
Yeah, which Traoré doesn't, but then Traoré is a more talented player. I think Barkley's return is pretty much imminent, which has kind of been helped by the break we're on. It's allowed Barkley to become fully fit. I think he starts through the middle and Grealish starts on the left in a full-strength Villa team. And then you're looking at bringing El Ghazi off the bench. I don't really see the need for David Brooks, with all due respect to him.
He is only like 22, 23, though.
Yeah, but I think El Ghazi and Traoré are only 24, 25, if you know what I mean. It's not, not a big enough change. Barkley's one worth mentioning, though. Apparently Chelsea want 30 million for him, which I'd...
If I was Villa, I'd go for it.
I'd pay more than that, if I'm being honest. I know my only question mark would be his injuries. But apparently we've told Hurahan to leave on loan, who I feel is a little bit underplayed this year, especially the amount he's played in getting us promoted. But like, I don't know. I think he's sort of a cult hero amongst Villa fans. But yeah, I think that central midfield area, if Luiz and McGinn are injured, would be where I strengthen, because I have my doubts about Nakamba and maybe a left back to cover Target instead of Neil Taylor would be looking, but not.
Yeah.
No sense of urgency, really. If the right player is available, then go for him. But I'm not desperate to see anyone come in this window as a Villa fan. West Brom, on the other hand, I feel like you might be looking for a couple. Anyone you can get your hands on, really. I believe Danny Simpson has come out and said he believes he is still good enough to play Premier League despite being released in the summer by Leicester. There's talk of Danny Rose being his time at Tottenham being over. They're willing to terminate his contract. Also, a potential loan move for Brandon Williams. All names that have been banded around with West Brom. Ewan, any thoughts? Who would you rather have? Do you see any of them happening?
I don't really see any of them happening. I think Brandon Williams, with Fosu Mensah leaving United, it's unlikely, unless they get another right back or cover, that they'll let him go out on loan. I think it'd be more likely that he'd go to Newcastle than us. I would take him. I think it'd definitely boost our squad.
I think we need the Premier League experience more than...
I think Danny Rose is... I couldn't see him being particularly keen to come to the Baggies. I think he's probably, as a player, is a bit too good for us. I know he needs to find somewhere that he could go, where I'm not too sure, but...
I would love Danny Rose at the Villa.
Yeah.
I don't know why he wouldn't go to Villa, to be fair, because Matt Target, he's not a bad player. He's probably the weak spot of the Villa starting 11.
I agree to an extent. Like, this is what I was going to say about Target, is like, last 4 or 5 games probably been his best I've seen him play. And he is only 24. And I think he needs... He either needs a really young fullback to push him, or he needs an experienced one to sort of teach him, but also be good enough. I don't think Neil Taylor anymore is good enough to sort of... I think Target knows he's going to be starting every week now. If Danny Rose comes in, it sort of forces him
a bit more competition, yeah.
Yeah, but...
See, the thing is, like, so with the Danny Simpson rumours as well, so Danny Rose and Danny Simpson, as much as they are good left-backs and good full-backs, so full-back is not West Brom's position where we need to strengthen. Like, Connor Townsend has been arguably one of our best players of the season, who I thought was very average Championship last season. But this year, he's actually looked good. Furlong, it would be hard to drop him, I think, especially considering, like, we've got bigger issues than fullback. So I would sign them because they're Premier League quality players, but then they wouldn't be priority for me.
Yeah, but I think, like, my argument would be it's nice to have someone fresh in. Like, if even if Barkley and Townsend had done well, you know, like the confidence of playing half a season and only winning the one game, like,
yeah, and it was Sheffield United,
yeah, like, I just like just a new lease of life, if you know what I mean. But then the wages that potentially come with someone like Danny Rose, is it worth it?
Well, yeah, absolutely not.
But we'd only be paying about half of it, probably, anyway.
But yeah, you know, Nassive can swing it, so I'd have him at the Villa. So, but
Is there anyone else you wanted to talk about, Gig?
Well, more just like sort of club specifically, like who do we think need to bring in certain players? More sort of the top six clubs. So obviously we've touched on Arsenal needing the number 10. I think Chelsea, go on, Ewan.
I was going to say, like, I know another name being banded around with Arsenal has been potentially getting Isco, who...
That would be a really good signing. I think that would work for everyone involved.
Yeah. Do you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like 2 or 3 years ago, you'd be like, what a signing that is. But I think he's sort of gone quite a little bit. He's had his trouble with injuries. But yeah, similar, like, very talented player like Ozil, and again that sort of winning experience, but
it could be a disaster.
Not cheap, and you feel like Arteta in a sense is trying to move away from that. He's going for the younger players he knows are gonna work hard for him. Chelsea was an interesting one, I thought, because ultimately it might just be their recent run of form, but it feels like something's not right. But ultimately, they've spent so much money and their squad's in a good place. You don't feel like they're going to be looking for anyone.
And there's also not a single position where I'm like, they definitely need to strengthen there.
I think
instead of Mason Mount.
Mason Mount's done absolutely fine. I think Declan Rice has been thrown around a bit for Chelsea. And I think that's sort of a Lampard sign-in. Lampard's a big fan of him.
Chelsea Academy as well.
Chelsea fan. He's got his best mate there. I know Man U were also interested, but then allegedly Man U are interested in everyone, according to every newspaper ever. So, yeah, I think Chelsea's probably his future, but it'd be unlikely for him to go now because West Ham would want at such a huge fee if it was to be in this window.
Yeah, he is the main man, really, at West Ham. I still have my doubts about the centre-back pairing, but I don't think that's something they'll resolve in this window. I'm surprised to see Tomori being linked with moves away, even if it is only on loan. I've always been quite impressed with him when I've seen him.
Yeah, I think he's similar to
Christensen. I know Christensen's been a bit weak at times, but I think there is some young talent there that is sort of getting overlooked, but maybe with Thiago Silva there, they can grow. I still have my doubts about Mendy, but it's too early to act on that, really. Speaking of big clubs, Alex, we'll probably look at Leeds next. Do you think they need to bring in any sort of reinforcements, particularly at the back? I think most goals conceded, most shots faced, etc., etc.
I mean, maybe, but then the thing is, at the end of the day, for a newly promoted club to be 12th is such an achievement. And they're scoring a lot of goals. However, defensively, I'd say they do need to improve, but it's not really the defence that's necessarily the issue. It's the system that they played the issue. In terms of conceding goals, the reason they concede goals is the system they play, not the players. Like,
yeah, but it's not exactly a star-studded back four. I know, like, Luke
Ayling. No, it's not. But then Luke Ayling is not one I'd replace. Maybe strengthen a bit in centre-back position, and I think, to be fair, like, for most players, like, Leeds would be an attractive club to go for. I can't believe how much I'm talking quite nicely of Leeds, really. But if I was a centre-back, say if I was James Barkowski or Ben Mee and Leeds wanted me, I would definitely think about going there.
Yeah.
So I think that would maybe be a quite good sign of them, especially if Burnley end up dropping off and end up in the relegation battle. But at Leeds, I don't think have any major issues that need to be sorted out.
I have my doubts about Melier, but he's still so young. You can stick with him.
And it's yeah, either, and I think he's sound after
it's either him or the racist. So
well, I think he's sound after the racist conceded three goals against Crawley.
But yeah, moving on. Obviously, with the finances they've got, Man City seem to be in the market for anyone they can get their hands on every window. But there's talk of Aguero potentially leaving. His contract's up at the end of the summer. I personally believe Gabriel Jesus is good enough to replace him.
But yeah, but I just don't want to see Aguero leave the league.
No one wants to see Aguero leave the league, I don't think. But ultimately, if that does happen, which they've got to prepare for, and it wouldn't be unlike City to buy someone anyway, can you see them going in for a striker, and who potentially?
I can't see them going in for a striker because Gabriel Jesus is good enough to do the job. And then they've started obviously playing De Bruyne in that false nine position. So they actually don't necessarily need strikers if they can commit to that. And I think if you like train Bernardo Silva for that false nine position as well, he could do the job. So I don't think they need a striker if Aguero was to go.
I don't think it's the future, but I just don't think it'd be very City to only have one recognised striker at the club.
They could
definitely make it work, but it wouldn't be there. It wouldn't be what would be their first choice.
Well, they have they have got Liam Delap coming through the ranks. So
he takes all the time, so he's never in the box.
But in terms of strikers, I think like every other major club in Europe, they're all after Erling Haaland if they could get a sniff.
Because
anyone
would take him. Going to be the best player in the world. He is an absolute machine.
I know Lou Barry's still pretty young, though, isn't he? So,
yeah, but he left the Albion, so I hate him.
worked out all right for him, though. But yeah, so we touched on a bit with Upamecano, but there's still this thing about Man United in the centre back, which I kind of believe. I still think they're going to struggle to win the league with the centre backs they've got. But again, it's one of them, like, realistically, who they're going to get in a January transfer window. Every time Man U seem to go into a player, they seem to get charged an extra 10, 20 million for them because everyone knows they've got this money from the sort of commercial side of the game, even if they're not necessarily achieving. Same with Spurs, really. I feel like that centre-back pairing isn't necessarily one that's going to win them the league. I don't know, you're a big Dyer advocate,
I'm a big Dyer advocate, but I think a name that's been thrown around for Spurs, potentially getting Skriniar at some point from a Conte into Milan would fit well into that Spurs team. He's a well-established and very quality centre back. He can do it all, and I think that'd be a big bolster to Spurs.
Yeah, it's a difficult one in the sense that I don't see why he'd want to leave, but I'm surprised more clubs haven't gone in for Kimpembe. I've always been impressed with him. I don't, like, for a French player, he's winning Ligue 1 every year. He's playing for Paris Saint-Germain, and they got to the Champions League final last year. Like, there isn't a lot of reason for him to leave, but might he be swayed by a United, you know what I mean?
Or a Real Madrid, I think.
But yeah, with Kimpembe, it's just like he's such a good player. Like, I can't believe he's not linked with more clubs, especially with like Liverpool, the problems they're having with injury. I don't know whether you feel like he's someone they could bring in, or is he a bit too much just for a short term fix?
Yeah, for me, it's not like really a Liverpool sort of signing, judging by their recent ones. Like, is it in a way is a bit too much of a name already? Like,
I get what you mean.
Like, and especially as well with the links with Upamecano, I don't think that's quite a Liverpool thing, and they'd be more likely to go for his partner of Konate, someone who's got mostly the same attributes, and some look at him and say that he plays better than Upamecano, but he just, because he's not quite as sort
not
of
big of a name.
Yeah, he's not as big of a name and not represented as much on the media because there's not as much speculation about him. It seems more like that would be a fit for Liverpool. And in terms of bringing him in, they definitely do need a centre back. Like, the issues they've had this year have proven that. Whether they're actually gonna fix that problem in January is yet to be seen, and seems like they won't. Another thing that I've been seeing is a potential loan move for Eder Militao, who's not been playing for Real Madrid this season. However, I think a short-term loan at a club like Liverpool to fix the issues that they've got and also give him game time, I think would work for both parties. But again, whether any transfers are really going to happen, I know Liverpool and Man United have been quite vocal that these are unlikely moves with everything going on.
Yeah, I know what you mean about with the coronavirus. Obviously, it just makes like everything so much harder. But I like what you're saying about the Eder Militao move, because like from a Liverpool point of view, because obviously that seems to benefit everyone involved. I do think Liverpool need a long-term solution to their centre-back issue, and that they have three who are Premier League quality, and then they've not really got anyone else. So they do need to either buy someone else who's a young prospect, or they just need to buy someone with a bit of Premier League experience who's
Seemingly player. Can't play two games in a row without getting injured.
Yeah, that's another issue. But I think United's issue that you sort of touched on with centre-backs is a lot more long-term, in that they have Bayern Maguire, who are good centre-backs, and I don't want to shit-talk them, but I don't know if United want to be challenging for the league title, they're not the centre-back partnership, so that's when they need to maybe look at someone like Sergio Ramos, whose contract is running out, I think, at the end of next season.
Yeah, I think he's turned one down, isn't he?
Yeah, so like that could be a massive thing. And if you were Sergio Ramos, I think there's four clubs that you go to, and it's Juventus, Bayern, Man United, or Liverpool.
Yeah, maybe Paris Saint-Germain, but yeah.
Maybe PSG, but I think that he won't want to go to PSG because he won't want to play in that league. You know what I mean? I think he would still want to play in the best divisions possible. So I think for United, that could be maybe not a long-term fix, but if United carry on this progression, they then bring in Sergio Ramos for 2 years, that could be a massive thing in terms of like helping the defence and also like the mentality that he would bring.
A bit like the Thiago Silva move this year for Chelsea.
Yeah, but almost on a more extreme level, because Sergio Ramos is arguably the best defender ever. In terms of success as a captain as well, then he's massive. So that would be a really good move for United, I think. So that may be something that I would be looking into if I was the laziest.
I agree to an extent. I think with the exception of Cavani, though, it's something they've moved away from. I think we saw it when Fergie left. They tried to buy a lot of serial winners. Di Maria, Schweinsteiger, Falcao, and it didn't work out for them. So obviously it seems to be working with Cavani, but I don't know if like they go for another sort of big ego, if you know what I mean.
But I don't think it's big ego. I just think he's a winner.
No, but he's a massive impact on the dressing room.
Yeah, I mean, big personality.
But then every time you look at a top six club, like they can all do with a centre back, if you know what I mean. Unless they got Ruben Diaz and Johnny Stones, you know what I mean.
But 6 months ago,
on the bench.
There you go. Like people were saying that about City. So yeah, but that's the big clubs out of the way. So moving on, we'll go for Wolves. Good team. They're sort of drop off since Jimenez's injury. They're sort of screaming out for a striker, it feels like. I don't think like they're the sort of club that are going to pay Diego Costa's wages. I think that was on the table for a while. But ultimately, I don't see it happening. They've recalled Catrone from loan at Florentina. But I don't think ultimately Nuno sees a lot in him. As we said, like Fabio Silva seems a talented player, but do you want to rely on him to score your goals? But yeah, just coming back to the Manu and Liverpool thing, it's like, especially Liverpool, they've been so well run recently. Like, if they were going to report someone, you feel like they would have by now. Like, 16th of January at the time of recording, and you feel like if Liverpool are going to get a player, they line them up before
the very early on the 16th,
and they get it done in the first week, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And that hasn't happened.
I don't think they're an emergency signing club, no.
Yeah, but then I quite like the short-term loan idea as well. I think a lot of clubs now are just buying players because the player's injured, because they can afford to, but ultimately I think the selling club feels like they're doing them a favour, if you know what I mean. And like, if we're going to do this favour, we want to make more money off it. I think Villa got that a bit with Samatta. Like, we didn't need to buy another
striker. What a waste of money.
Yeah, and God, get rid of him. Sorry, Mwana, but you know, just not ready. But
I remember having Villa fans like, "Oh, can't bet your bloody gutted that you didn't sign him," because it was us and Villa who were in for him, and not that bothered now.
Worked out all right though, but
yeah,
yeah.
For both of us, to be fair,
yeah. But yeah, that pretty much does it for our transfer talk. Still a couple of weeks left in the window, so it remains to be seen what will happen. But in the meantime, stay tuned for more podcasts. There'll definitely be more coming because we bloody love talking about football. be sure to get at us on Twitter. I believe we're past the 200 follower mark now. So
past the 250 follower mark.
Business is booming at FNFTTP. Also, Ewan is responsible for some lovely TikToks we've been putting out at FNF _3_points. And then the Instagram as well, which is also huge, at FNF 3 points with the number 3. But yeah, if you didn't watch the podcast, go watch the podcast. If you didn't watch it on YouTube, go watch it on YouTube. Anything to add before we go, gentlemen?
No, I think you've done the job there.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Unless you have anything to say.
No. Thank you. Thank you for your services, George.
I would like to say that this Norwich player is, I don't know if you can see the one I'm pointing at.
Okay.
And also this one, these two are in some very good poses.
Yeah. Very they're your favourite.
They must be pretty warm by now. They've been stretching for a long time.
They've been stretching, but I reckon they're good for a run now.
Maybe not in the run in the Premier League next year, though.
But yeah, by the way, guys, if you want to understand what we're talking about, you have to watch the YouTube video. So you may have just listened to the whole audio, but you have to go and listen to the YouTube now.
That's how we get you. But yeah, thank you very much for listening/watching.